Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you. A happy belated new year, a happy and a healthy one. We're here to break down all that is happening with the New York Giants in the next 60 minutes. Two ways you can interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. That's the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to as many tweets as we can today as well. So you have a few things going on right now. You have the Giants coaching search that is continuing. The Giants have officially mentioned that they did have a formal interview with Steve Spagnuolo earlier this week, and they will have other candidates that they will be talking with in the coming days into next week. Obviously, the weather provided some issues, but Spags has had his formal interview, and John Mara made it very clear, Jeff, during the course of him taking over as interim coach, that he would have an opportunity to chat and discuss his outlook if he were given the permanent gig.
Well, that's good, and I think that when you talk about Steve Spagnuolo, a guy that has so much experience with the organization, and so I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. John Mara and the Tisch family, they understand that he knows about the Giants and how they want to run. The bottom line here is that is he the guy that's going to take them to the next level, and that is to rebuild this football team and get it back to respectability and back to some Giants pride. He's the guy that could do that because he comes from the system. He won a Super Bowl with us. I say with us because he was on the staff when I was there, and that he has been here for a while. And so, you know, I think they had to give him that opportunity, and how the meeting went, nobody will know. But I think that he's way ahead of the game as far as interviewing for a job like this because he's been around the building.
Only the flies on the wall will know how the meeting goes.
Man, if there's kind of a fly you want to be on the wall, it'd be the one in these meetings right here and then one in the draft room.
Yes, exactly.
I want to be in the draft room. I want to be a draft room fly. That's what I want to be. I want to hear what they're talking about, and God, would be great.
All the good stuff.
It'd be great if we knew exactly what they were talking about in the draft, because it seems to be all the talk of everything is that now the Giants, they know where they're picking and who they're going to go with and all this other stuff. So, but first they got to find a coach, and that's what they're doing. I know that the brass is up in New England today, and I think they're going to be interviewing, I don't know if it's today or tomorrow, but the guys up there, so.
The report is that Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia, the two Patriots coordinators, gotcha, are the next guys up. That's according to multiple reports that were put out there today. Nothing official, though, from the Giants standpoint. You just hit on the draft, and that was the other angle that I wanted to get to, Jeff. So what's happened over the last few days is we now know USC's quarterback Sam Darnold has declared for the draft, and we know UCLA's quarterback Josh Rosen has declared for the draft. So what this has done is it hasn't given any indication of who the Giants are going to be taking with the number two overall pick, but what it does is it adds value to that selection, Jeff. And what I mean by that, when you have multiple quarterbacks who are considered top prospects that have now said we're entering the NFL draft, there's more options, which means more teams may be interested perhaps in talking to you if they want to move up and you're not convinced,
sure,
that one of those quarterbacks is the guy that you want to go with.
Well, yeah, and plus now the teams know for sure and that these guys are going to be available. But I think you make a good point that these other teams that may want to be moving up, and what's going to happen with these interviews is that they can't keep all this a secret. There's going to be things that get out about how these guys interviewed, and the combine's going to be a big one. But and then you got the personal workouts and all this stuff. So there's a lot still to be,
of course,
to be known. But the fact, the one known about it is that these guys are going to be available, and now you can start to focus in if these are going to be one of your guys that you want to go after and start your due diligence process. There's also the other side of the coin is that maybe through your due diligence process that all of a sudden you feel like this isn't one of the guys that we want to go after. And so maybe that changes your whole draft strategy, and maybe it's, we're not going to go after a quarterback, but then now guess what happens? Now number 10 comes into the equation. So there is just so much that's going on. That's going to be going on after the Giants decide who their next head coach is going to be. And I'm sure that that's a question and that's in one of these meetings is that, hey, this is our situation. What do you see it as? How do you evaluate our roster? What do you see it, where this team is going and the needs? And is a quarterback a need? We know that we have a 37-year-old quarterback on the roster now. These are things that all these new coaches have to be asked about, and I'm sure the organization wants to hear their response because it's important.
Well,
I mean, it's really important. The number 10 and the number 2 pick are very important. Number 10 meaning Eli.
Correct.
And the number 2 pick. This has to be on the tops of the list because this is, you're not in this situation very often when you're in the number 2 pick. I mean, you're the worst team in the NFC last year, and then you get the second pick. That usually doesn't happen around these parts.
Well, and that's why when you're in this position, Jeff, you have to find the balance between finding somebody that meets your short-term needs as well as somebody that meets your long-term needs. That's what's unique about picking this high in the draft, because while everybody is going to be like, all right, hey, you want to get a guy that's going to come in tomorrow, he's going to make an immediate impact. I agree with you there, but I think at the same time, knowing how old Eli Manning is, knowing that you're in a crossroads in terms of where you are as an organization, you do also need to consider if you could get your hands on somebody that could be the franchise quarterback moving forward, there's value in at least debating that and discussing that. And I think that's right now where the Giants are at.
There is no question in my mind that this is the topic that has to be addressed. And when you talk about, if Eli Manning was 27 years old, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Eli Manning is 37. We could sit here and talk till the cows come home about how much longer each one of us think he can play. But the reality of it is that you have a Tom Brady that's up in New England that's 40 years old and is playing, but he's one of the rare people you'll ever meet that's going to play at that level at 40 years old. Eli doesn't get hurt. He's an Iron Man. So that's to an advantage of a 37-year-old. Speaking from experience here, I can tell you, is that once you start to get into that late 30s and all of a sudden you're approaching the fourth floor, things in your body start to happen, and you have to change your routines as far as conditioning and the way that you train. Eli's one of those guys that will do that. Eli's one of those guys you know that's going to go and give you 16 games a year. It's just, where does the ability come into it? And then you got to say, are you willing to roll the dice and go with Eli for a couple more years? And then if that's the case, then you go and draft, maybe you move down or you say, you know what, we're going to draft Saquon Barkley at number two. I don't know, but I think that it's definitely something that has to be discussed, and I think that that Eli Manning will be in that room. I think they'll have those discussions, and then it'll make it a little bit easier of a roadmap to understand where this organization wants to go, because you got to get a quarterback. I mean, look at the other team in this area. They've struggled with a quarterback forever, and you don't want to put yourself in that position, and if these – three or four quarterbacks that are there this year, Lance, are one of them or you feel like is your guy, then you got the second pick. You got to go get him.
Well, and I think you also need to look at the state of the division too, Jeff.
Well,
other team in New York. How about the division? The Cowboys drafted Dak Prescott, who had some ups and downs, but still looks to be a promising player. Correct. Kirk Cousins, if he stays with the Redskins, Washington at least knows its future. That's still a question mark, but they have an option there. And then Philadelphia with Carson Wentz. Granted, he did suffer a torn ACL, but once again, you think that all three of those teams, if nothing drastically changes in the offseason, that they at least have stability for the near future.
That's the word.
Correct. Whereas now the Giants are thinking, okay, well, when we do choose to move on from Eli Manning, we want to be in that same boat. We want to gain stability. And I think here's the big difference, Jeff. The Giants have drafted quarterbacks before when we had discussions about Ryan Nassib and Davis Webb. This is the first offseason that I think you could say the end of Eli Manning's career is something that is not just a figment of our imagination. It will be reality at some
there's
point.
There's no question. And when, it's funny that you use the word stability and how talking about stability within the division. The Giants have had that card.
They've been the poster children.
Absolutely. The other teams have said, God, I wish we had stability at the quarterback position like the Giants have.
Yeah.
The tide is turned a little bit now. Now it's like is the next quarterback going to have that stability where, you know, I got to believe, and I'm just going to go, when you look at some of the success of these young guys in the National Football League today, you know, the Carson Wentz, okay, the Jared Goff, some of the younger guys, Dak Prescott, you can have success right away with some of these quarterbacks, because especially if the systems that they are coming from are a pro-style system, okay? You look at a Baker Mayfield who comes from a non-pro-style, he's out of the shotgun 99.9% of the time, okay? The guys that are Rosen and Darnold, they're legitimate pro-style quarterbacks. They're under center, okay? So there's the first thing. They're two big guys, tall, you know, height-wise. That's another thing that the Giants quarterbacks have always had is they're big. Well, Eli's a big guy. He's
correct.
6 foot five. That's the type of quarterback that the Giants want to get a big guy in a pro set. The cards are kind of lining up for these guys that are in the draft this year, which points the finger towards this might be the year that we're going to go get them. I tell you, this is a tough decision because you're dealing with a guy that Eli Manning in this franchise is so honored in the way he's done everything. So you're kind of like, and then what happened earlier in the year, or later in the year with what happened with McAdoo and the benching and things like that. There's a lot of stuff that you have to just to kind of go over here, because the fans, they want to win. But they love Eli Manning, and a lot of them think that Eli can still play for a couple more years. But are you going to put yourself in that position? So,
well, and that's the challenge for Dave Gettleman, Jeff, that you just hit on.
It's a hard – I think it's a hard thing, and that's why I think 10 has to be in the conversation when they go through all of this stuff. You got to get his opinion on what's going on.
Well, you at least need to know what his outlook is for the remainder of his career, yeah. What his goals are, how much longer he wants to play. That, I think, is an extremely productive conversation. But at the end of the day, Jeff, I would still say that management, ownership, needs to do what's good for the franchise.
No question.
Not necessarily what's good for one individual player.
And what I meant exactly, it's what's good for the organization. When I say that we're going to talk with Eli, we're going to say, listen, Eli, we want to afford you the opportunity here to tell us what you kind of want to do. We're going to do the best thing for our organization, but we want to handle it the right way. We've already had a PR nightmare of what happened last time. We don't want to go down that road again. We want to make sure that we're on the same page here, and whatever happens, we all agree on it, and it's announced the way it is, and that's the way we're going to go. So I just can't see, in my opinion, that Eli Manning is going to want to tutor somebody and then have the ability to the organization says, you know, when we're ready, we're going to put the guy in. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I don't think that's the way. When you're talking about a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback with the credentials that he has and the resume, I don't think for one moment that a guy like that wants to sit back and tutor somebody to come in. He wants to play, and Eli still knows he can play. I know he does. And with some other, you know, linemen around him and, you know, whatever it is to build around him for another year, then maybe they hand the torch off to the new guy in a year from now, let him understudy. But I don't think for a minute that Eli would agree that I'm going to be able to be pulled out of the game at any time, because that's tough to prepare for, if you ask me. I mean, I would have hated if we had another punter on the roster and the guys were like, hey, listen, in the first half, if you don't do so well, we're going to bring the other guy in. It would make me work harder, but I would just hate to have being looking over my shoulder all the time.
The mindset of what would have to go through.
It takes away from my preparation. It takes away from my will. It's just like if that tells me you don't have all the utmost confidence in me. So, you know, if you don't have the confidence in me, then let me go somewhere else where somebody else will have the confidence in me. Then I think that's kind of what I'm saying.
Well, and that's why these conversations
have
to happen.
You have to have it. Yeah.
I mean, they're extremely productive. Whether or not you stick with that player or not, it's productive so that everybody can hear each other out. And that's what you need.
And pretty much Eli had already told Ben McAdoo that, you know, I'm not on board with you starting me and Ben taking me out of the game. That's not what I'm going to do, so you might as well just sit me down. So, I mean, that's – you can see where his mindset is. I don't think that's going to change between 6 weeks ago and now. It's still going to be the same way
Correct.
He thinks
that
about it.
Desire, that fight to be on the field. However, what if there's a scenario, Jeff, where they say, Eli, we're bringing you back for this season –
at
we
22
want
million.
To draft, correct. We want to draft a quarterback at number two because we really like this guy. We want you to show him the ropes like you did with Davis Webb. And Eli Manning, when he has been asked about, would you be okay with mentoring a young player, he says, listen, I've always looked at myself as a good teammate. I've never had a problem doing that. And they tell him, listen, you're the starter for the entire year, but we're going to reevaluate things after 18 and what we want to do heading into 19. Because I could see them doing something like that, Jeff.
I definitely could see them doing something like that. I definitely could see Eli saying to them, if that's your plan and that's what you tell me, then, you know, I don't want to leave. I got my family here, which makes a big difference. And, you know, I only take it 1 year at a time at this age. I mean, if I'm 27, I got to think about playing for 5 or 6, 7, 8 more years. But when I'm 37, I'm basically taking it year by year. And so that might be something he's interested in, but I would have to get the no-honk guarantee that that's what it's going to be. And listen, they have the prerogative to do anything they want. You work for the organization, so they can do anything they want. But I think the only way that would work is that Eli understands that if I get into the end of the season and it's your prerogative to do this, if I'm really stinking up the place and I'm not playing as I should, just like if you weren't playing wide receiver like you should, I'm going
to
yank you out of
There's
there
There's always
too.
That risk.
I'm gonna
yeah, every
bench
player
you,
has to
DRC.
Feel that way. Yeah.
I'm going to bench you. You know, those are off the field stuff. But if you're not producing and you're not playing, and the fact that maybe, you know, he could get hurt, anything could happen, but I'm not coming out of the game unless my production is falling off to a point where you don't think that I can help win anymore. That's where you draw the line in the sand and say, you know what, you're not helping us win, and we're going to make a change. Okay, well, you know, I did it to myself, but, you know, if I'm playing at a high level and you're going to want to get the younger guy in there, I just don't see this team, you know, I think this team is going to come out with a vengeance. I think that Dave Gettleman is going to get some people in here that can do some good things with the personnel. This coaching staff is going to – they're going to coach. Like, they have a – the foundation of this roster isn't as bad as people think it is. You can't look at what the end of the year, that flip card, the last Arizona game.
Oh, yeah, so many guys that were pulled off the street or on the practice
squad. Many guys that were pulled off the street. There's going to be so many guys that are pulled off that roster, too, because there's a lot of those guys that will not be coming back here. But you have so many injuries, the guys are going to return, and you got free agency in the draft. This team can turn things around. And you made the point a few weeks back that when you look at every team that's won the NFC East, that has in the last however many years,
for the
last
3 years, correct. The last place team has then the following year gone on to first. Now, that doesn't mean that the Giants are a lock to do it in 2018, but the point is, Jeff, that you're hitting home is quick turnarounds can happen in the National Football League. Well, that's been well documented.
It can happen. Yeah. I think that teams expect it nowadays. There's no longer, in my opinion, the 3 year building projects that happened years ago where you hire a coach and you say, listen, you got 3 years. Okay. That's if you can't build a team and get them to the playoffs and have a winning organization in 3 years, you're going to get fired. I think now, but you have the more propensity with free agency and the way that the guys are coming out of the draft, the quality of players, you can turn around an organization, especially when you got a defense. You know, and the cap, it all comes into, you know, who you're going to get rid of. But the defense is still pretty much intact. There's not a lot of free agencies on that.
Well, because they gave a lot of those guys multi-year contracts when they all came in. Vernon, Snacks, Jenkins.
Yeah.
So you have that core returning unless, obviously, management decides to go in a different direction. I will give you that. And then on offense, you know, you have Beckham, you have Shepard, you have Ingram. You have some weapons there. It's just there's three offensive linemen who started last season that are going to be free agents. DJ Fluker, remember, we forget, he's another one that you got to throw in there in addition to Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg. So decisions have to be made in terms of, is it a complete resurrection of the O-line? Are you bringing back a few guys? What's going to happen there? Because remember, that's going to impact whatever we're talking about with Beckham and Shepard. You could have all these weapons, Jeff, but the offensive line has to be in shape and in good shape to do production-wise.
What you're going to see here is that when Dave Gettleman worked for the Giants, okay, he wasn't the general manager, okay? So the general manager was pushing all the right buttons. Dave Gettleman is the general manager now. Dave Gettleman is going to bring his expertise, his experience, and do it the way he wants to do it, okay? So what that means is that he's going to look at this offensive line. He's going and he's going to look at Eli Manning, and he's going to watch film, and he's going to critique them, and he's going to get grades on every one of them, and then they're going to move on from there. So what this prior organization thought of Justin Pugh, DJ Fluker, Westberg, you know, all the other guys that are there, okay? The new regime, being Dave Gettleman and his staff, is going to they may look at all those guys and say, we don't want any of them. That's just their –
it could be a completely different philosophy. That's what always happens.
It's a completely different philosophy.
When you have a new GM, yeah.
And they also could say, you know what? We think that there's three guys in the draft that we'd like to go after offensive linemen, or there might be two guys in free agency where the old guys were like there was nothing in the draft last year. But it's just a total different philosophy in how you're going to build a team. I think that Dave Gettleman, as much as this team was – how bad they were this year – I think there still is a good nucleus of players on this football team that can get this team back in the right way, and I think it can happen. And I like his approach. He's going to be a guy that's very truthful, a guy that's cut and dry, black and white. This is the way it's going to be, and, you know, deal with it.
Before we get back to the phone calls, I want to just bring up one point in relation to Gettleman. He recently did an interview with New York Daily News this week, Jeff. Two things that I felt were interesting out of that interview. Number one, he was asked what he did after he parted ways with the Carolina Panthers. He said that he watched more college football on television than he has ever done, as well as NFL games. And he also went down to NFL Films, which is located in New Jersey, and studied film about NFL teams, individual players, college players that entered the NFL last year, and really had an opportunity to sit back, reflect, and look at talent, which is something that I pointed out on Twitter when people were wondering, well, you know, if they make changes to the front office parting ways with Mark Ross, what does that mean in terms of the draft outlook? And I said, well, don't overlook the fact that I'm sure Gettleman has watched a lot of film during his time off, and
he's
been keeping up on what's going on in the league and college. So that was confirmed by this interview. The other thing was, he was asked specifically, you said on SiriusXM NFL Radio that you were meeting with Eli Apple Wednesday. How did that go? His response, quote, it went fine. Eli was attentive and focused, and because he was suspended, he couldn't be at the team meeting where I spoke to the team on Monday, so I went through that process, so we'll see where it goes, end quote. And he was on the record at his introductory press conference when he was asked also about Eli Apple, and one of the statements that he made, and I'm paraphrasing, Jeff, was he was always told during the course of his career, you can't quit on talent. That was the one thing that he brought up. So everybody's associating that with Eli Apple, that, you know, do you want to quit on a guy that was a first-round pick so quickly after he was drafted? The meeting was step one to determine where Gettleman wants to go. But I think right now there's still a lot of question marks because you're going to have an entire offseason to decide what you want to do.
I agree with the term, you can't quit on talent, but you can't quit on, I mean, it depends on whose talent
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, Eli Apple was in the draft when Dave Gettleman was with the Carolina Panthers. It'd be interesting if you had two of the I'd like to see his draft
analysis. His evaluation, yes,
of
correct,
Eli
of Eli Apple.
Apple.
Yes.
So if he was a first-round draft pick on his board in his evaluation and he's not going to quit on talent, then I think those two, that could work. I like I said before, I think that Dave Gettleman is going to take and critique and evaluate every single player on this roster. He's going to look back at his notes from when he was at Carolina and did, because this is a fairly young roster, and look at those and compare the two and say, how did you play this last season? And those are some things that he's going to look at. So, but with Eli Apple, I don't think that Eli Apple is as much as a talent issue as it is his head and off the field and getting his mind right and things that, you know, these young guys have to understand. And listen, I can tell you this because I played in the league so long and that the money went from, you know, X to Y in the years. But you got to understand that if you are a guy that comes into the National Football League, you have a tremendous opportunity, and that to set yourself up for the rest of your life and for your family and things like that. It's this is what you do. You've worked all your life to play this game. Okay, and to let silly things bother you and bother your teammates in the organization, you got to get over some of this stuff. Now, that's up to him. I mean, he has to understand that he has a great opportunity. Now, if you don't quit on talent and Dave Gettleman thinks that you're a talent, he's not going to quit on you, but he's going to quit on you when you give him the opportunity to by doing the things that you do. So I think that it couldn't have better come at a better time where all of a sudden it's the off season. He has to go back, look at himself, look at what he wants to do in his future, have some conversations with some good people that have been in situations like this. Like Brandon Marshall had mentioned that he wants to talk to Eli Apple because Brandon Marshall was kind of a pain in the neck kind of things that this is kind of what happened. He can turn this guy around and have a great career, and you hope he does. You really do. Because he does. You look at the way he played a year before last. They had a good year. I mean, this secondary, one of the best secondaries.
Yeah, very productive 2015.
So there's no reason they can't get back to that. And I think that the next coach is going to walk in here and go, listen, I got DRC at one of the corners. I got Jack Rabbit. I got Eli Apple, who's a first rounder, who's played, you know, pretty well 2 years ago. I got a lot of options here. Ross Cockrell's another guy he came here and nobody really knew much about him, but I think he had one of the better seasons of all the guys that were there.
Yeah, there's value if you want to bring him back as the fourth corner, or perhaps, you know, at least have him as an insurance policy. I think there's value to that.
I agree. I agree. You know,
because that had been an issue, that position, that fourth cornerback in previous years. Jeff, remember DRC goes down in the Packers playoff game, and everybody's wondering who's going to come in. Is Aaron Rodgers going to target that guy? And that's exactly what happened. So there is value in who the fourth corner is.
And we haven't gotten into the draft and the depth at each position yet, but you know, if you can get cornerbacks in the draft that are good, you can never have enough cornerbacks. We know that. We see the way they play. You see the way that they play hard. They run. They're runners. They're thoroughbreds. They just, their bodies break down. They're not very big guys. You can't have enough corners. You can never have enough good corners, that's for sure.
You can never have enough of any position, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean,
especially after a season like this.
Sure, absolutely. But I think that, you know, on the pecking order of where we got to go, the giant offensive line, I mean, I know we're talking about the the number two pick in the draft and all that stuff, but the bottom line is it don't matter who you are at quarterback if you don't have good linemen. That's the first and foremost thing that the Giants have to understand. They got to fix the offensive line. And then I think behind a good offensive line, Eli can still play. I really do with the weapons he has around him. I think that Orleans Darkwell and Gallman both proved that they can be good running backs in this football league. I think that, you know, offensively things can be fixed, but it starts with the offensive line.
And that's exactly what Dave Gettleman emphasized in his introductory presser a week ago. Let's open up the phone lines, 201-939-4513. He's Jeff Feagles. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks for tuning in to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got Mike in Fort Myers. He gets us going. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Jeff,
Mike.
I had been chatting with one of your counterparts, David Deal, on what moves he might make specifically to the offensive line. And then they've started to expand on the rest of the team's needs. And so picking up from what you said, what you've been talking about,
sure.
David said the first thing that he would do is move Flowers to right tackle as a start on the offensive line. But then he got into a discussion of what the team, what he felt the team really needed, and the fact that he thought there was going to be wholesale changes going to be made on both the offensive and defensive teams. For example, he did not see both Olivia Vernon Davis and JPP both being on the Giants. He thought that one of them would be gone. I think he was looking at monetary constraints. But he also talked about needing linebackers, that we've got really slow linebackers. So when you look at the needs, as you were talking about that, what would you do if you were the general manager?
Well, the first thing I would do would understand that there's needs at on any NFL team, there's needs, always needs everywhere. But you only have so much money, so much cap space, so many draft picks, and certain things you can do. So you cannot go after every need on a football team. So there's not enough money, there's not enough time, there's not enough anything to do it. For me, it starts with the foundation on offense. That is your line. Period. Okay? I feel like you have a quarterback. I still think that Eli can play. You may have a new quarterback in the number two pick. Okay? Your running backs, I think, are serviceable. I think that they're not the best in the NFL, but they're going to get you through. Your wide receiver certainly showed you that what happens when the team doesn't have them. Okay? So the foundation on offense is right there on the offensive line. And Flowers, I don't know what to tell you about Flowers. I think that the left tackle study now is over. I think that they're either going to say that, you know, we're going to move you to another position or move on from him. I don't know. He's still young. He's still only, this will be his fourth year coming up. You know, there's still some I don't know. Maybe another position he plays better. But you got to look at center. You got to look at Jones, the way he played this year, and you got to look about what Richburg is going to want as far as money that comes back. Justin Pugh is going to be expensive. He's the number two rated offensive lineman coming out in free agency this year. Somebody's going to pay him because he plays tackle and he plays guard. So that's kind of – so the Giants, to answer your question, it has to be on offensive line. Defensively, you know, there's a lot of money tied up in those two ends. And when you get into needs at another position, you usually have to sacrifice something else. And that's where you got to start looking for money. And one of those two guys could be gone. Who knows?
All right. I want to ask you about the culture in the locker room and how a new coach, if it's not Spagnuolo, because he might bring back most
any
of his
coach,
whole team.
Sure.
How do you go about improving it? I mean, our Sterling Shepard was quoted as saying, you know, everybody knows what the problems are, et cetera. I don't know if that's the right, you know, phrasing, but you know where I'm going.
Well, everybody knows what the problems are, meaning the 53 guys inside the locker room. You know, I think that a new coach has to come in here. And really, I think that McAdoo had a tough – he was very in a tough position. He was following a guy that, you know, was – Tom Coughlin is a tough guy to follow. I mean, two Super Bowls,
yeah.
The way he does things. Okay, and so McAdoo wanted to get away from as much as he could of Tom Coughlin because – but he still had a respect for Tom. So he had to kind of keep some of the things. I think the new coach can come into here because of removed how far removed that Tom Coughlin is, being 2 years ago, and what McAdoo has done. I don't think that a lot of people will be too mad about him not keeping some of the traditions that McAdoo had, okay? But he can come in here and bring in his own philosophies, can bring in some of the things that he needs to do, and that's what Gettleman's looking for. He's looking for a guy that can manage a football team of men, you know, and be a communicator. Those are the things that he has to start off with in the locker room right away. This is how we're going to do things, guys. We're about team. We're about family. If you got something you want to air your dirty laundry, you do it. You do it within us, not outside the organization, and start trying to implement some of the rules and being forceful with the rules right up front. Don't let anything go. That's my opinion on things. And then with the players, you got to have your leaders. And I think that when you go out and look at free agencies and you're interviewing guys in the draft for potential young guys that are going to be on this team for 2, 3, 4 years, you want to see if they have some leadership skills. Landon Collins is a guy that you can see is wanting to be a leader, okay? You just got to kind of get together with him and say, hey, Landon, you know, you can't say some of these things in the media.
Yeah.
But I think leadership amongst players is kind of what has been missing in that locker room. Okay, and that's what Sterling Shepard is talking about. We know where the problems are. We know what's going on. There isn't enough leaders in that locker room. There isn't guys that can go around and shut people up without having fights and stuff, just sitting down and have a conversation with them. And, you know, I'm rattling on because I could talk about this forever.
And that's one of the things that Dave Gettleman
–
Mike, hold on one second. I just want to add one thing. Okay, we'll get to you. Well, one of the things that Dave Gettleman – talked about on that subject, Jeff, is that he said, you know, one of the things that he did when he was in Carolina, when he was making some changes and parting ways with guys that made a lot of money, it was the locker room that he was taking into consideration.
Absolutely.
It wasn't just the salary cap and the X's and O's, because when he had brought in a former Patriot, one of the things that the Patriot said, I feel like I'm in New England based on how I see this locker room interact. So that's a big part of how you put a team together when you're a general manager. You're not just thinking about what this guy's going to do, how many tackles he's going to get. Is he a good mix for the current culture of the locker room too?
And I'll answer Lance real quick, and we'll get right back to you, Mike.
Yeah.
The problem, that it's tough because leaders are usually they're a little bit older players. They're guys that have been around a while. So you bring, you know, it's kind of tough to bring a second year guy in or a first year guy and expect them to be leaders in the locker room. You have to rely on the veterans of the team, which could be a free agent. So if you're going to go out and get a free agent, you're going to do your due diligence on this guy. You're going to talk to the other coaches, talk to the trainers, talk to everybody. Hey, how does this guy lead? And this is the kind of guy we want. John Beeson was one of those guys. Antonio Pierce was one of those guys. You know, these are the kinds that you talk to these people and you bring them in. They instantly have credibility in the locker room and their leadership skills. Other people gravitate to these guys. If you don't have enough of those, you start getting cliques. And the cliques in the locker room are death. They will kill you. Prime example, I'll tell you right now. You got an offensive line group, okay, that are in one section of the locker room. You got Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart on the other part of the building. That's not good. I can tell you that right now, okay? Everybody's got to – your position groups usually stay together. You hang around each other. When you start getting clicks, all things go afoul, and you saw it. I'm telling you.
Yeah, you want there to be some chemistry amongst the position groups.
There has to be, not one.
You can't just have a bunch of positions on an island.
Exactly. You cannot do it, and then that's the tough thing about a coach going out and getting free agencies or a GM guy getting these. You got to have some guys that are going to hold the locker room together. Entrell Roll was one of those guys. I mean, Entrell Roll, he would tell Eli, you know, dude, what's going on? You know, and he wasn't afraid of what he was going to say. You got thick skin in the locker room. There isn't enough thick skin guys around these days.
What else you got, Mike?
Well, he pretty much asked my follow-up answered my follow-up question. So thank you very much, Jeff,
you're welcome, Mike,
for being so expansive and informative.
That's why Lance and I are so good together, see? Other than him picking my over-under questions and stuff to lose me the whole thing. I didn't want to get into that too
much.
Well,
I wasn't the best replacement. I will not pat myself on the back. But you were pretty behind in the standings, that there was only so much help that I could attempt to get.
Just real quick, and we'll get to. But I was out of town last week. I went down to the Orange Bowl to watch my son play. So Lance had sent me an email.
Great response, by the way, via email.
And Lance,
don't bother me. I'm in Miami. Leave me alone.
So Lance had said, hey, by the way, just so we have to be consistent, can you just give me your over unders and fact or fiction answers for the contest so that everything is fine? And I simply responded back to him, Lance, I have no idea. Just pick them for me.
Yeah, that's what we call checking out at week 17.
Yeah. I'm
that's
at
what
the pool.
That was a nice way to do it.
Yeah. So, but that's okay. So yes. I ended up in last place.
Well, you still hold the record though for the best winning percentage in any given season, which I tweeted out. 62%.
There you go.
No one has topped 62% since we have kept tally.
That's
so
cool.
Nobody's taking that away from you. And everybody was under 50%.
And I guess Schmelk has two wins on
his
credit.
He does. He has two. Paul has one, and you have one.
All right.
So you have an opportunity next year to
tie
for first place.
And by the way,
bounce back season for everybody.
That game is tough. It's a tough game.
It is.
Because you actually have to have the players do what they're supposed to do according to us, which doesn't always work out.
Well, you have to be a good soothsayer. That's what you have to be. Oh. Some people lack in terms of their ability to see the future. Let's head back to the phone lines. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
What's up, Abdul?
Hey, guys.
Yeah, how you doing, my man? We haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those seasons that I had not much good to say, so kind of it was quiet. So,
understandable.
But you guys are seeing what it's like to be in Minnesota now, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got a little bit of a taste of that right now. 10 degrees driving in here this morning. I don't know how y'all do it.
So what do you got for us, Abdul?
It's -4 here from snow, so it's a regular winter. But anyway, have you guys had a chance to listen to Bill Parcells? He spoke at Market K show yesterday, and they asked him about, you know, picket number 2 and stuff. And I don't understand what this suddenly unwritten rule is. If you pick a quarterback at 2, he has to play right away.
Who said that? Whoever said that?
Bill Parcells said he shouldn't force the issue. He said quarterback is one of the most missed positions. If you look, like, since 1980, how many first-round quarterbacks have not worked out?
No question.
Like, yeah. Well, but I can say the same thing about other positions, too, as well. I mean, I think it's a little unfair.
Because it's a very difficult position to play,
yeah,
that the success rate is very low.
I guess my point is, I don't understand why, if the Giants do pick, say, at quarterback number 2, why they have to force him on the field right away. You know, I'm more of a conservative person. I'm more of a bird in the hand is better than 2 in the bush. Like,
yeah.
If Eli is still capable, draft quarterback at 2, but let him sit behind him for a couple of years.
Abdul,
like, I don't understand why you have
I'll tell you why. I'm going to answer your question. The organization, a lot of times, is forced, and this may not make sense, and they won't agree with this, but in this area, in this market, there is so much pressure from the media, the fans, and everybody that when you draft the number 2, it's every day is going to be when is – look, we saw it with Davis Webb when all of a sudden Eli got benched. Where's Davis Webb? Why isn't Davis Webb playing?
Yeah.
Why? They're not on the field every day knowing that Davis Webb isn't ready to play. The coaching staff does. But there's so much pressure. That's where there's the unwritten rule comes from.
Even if we're winning? So say next year Eli's playing and we're, you know, come out of the box 5-3 or, you know, 6-2. And so you think that people would be like, hey, where's Rosen?
No, they wouldn't. You know?
But
it goes along with what's going on in the season.
Yeah,
that's
losing, I think, fosters that.
Oh, there's no question.
It strengthens the argument to say, well, let's evaluate the young kid if we're not going to gain anything by seeing what Eli can continue to do because we already know what he can do.
I can tell you from being around this organization and being around the area that if Eli is back in uniform next year and the Giants do the things they need to do in the fans' opinion, as far as building up that offensive line again, maybe adding a couple pieces on offense here and there, nobody's going to question if the other guy should play or not. I think you saw the amount of what happened when Eli went out and they benched him. People went crazy. There's a lot of people that like Eli Manning and still think that he can play.
Exactly. And I think you touched on this a few seconds ago, that there's still enough pieces on this team that it's not a total rebuild. You know, there's plenty of talent on this team. We just need to dam up some holes. So if this is a complete rebuild, that there's no other, you know, I understand, you know, Eli, we love you, but it's not going forward. But I still think there's enough talent on this team that you shouldn't throw everything out the window. I just don't get it.
Well,
you know,
Abdul, I don't think, I mean, in fairness, I don't think there is ever such a thing as a total rebuild in the NFL. I kind of chuckle when I hear that because of the salary cap limitations, you can't technically get rid of a 53-man roster and then all of a sudden bring in a new group of 53 because you're limited. You'd have dead money. You can't just part ways with guys.
You know when a team is saying, you know what, we you're not going for it next year. You know, they get rid of the veterans, they get rid of the QB. You could.
Let's use the Philadelphia Eagles, and I was going to bring this up when you were talking about when you draft a kid at number two that you have to play them. You got two examples. You got Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre, and then he made a great transition. And then the Eagles, right. for example, when they drafted Carson Wentz, they had – at least it appeared initially around draft time.
Bradford.
You had Sam Bradford, you had Chase Daniel. Then all of a sudden, Teddy Bridgewater gets hurt, right? The market changes, and they're like, the Vikings want to give us a number one pick for Sam Bradford? Okay, we'll throw Carson Wentz out there. So all of a sudden, that changed their philosophy. I don't think it stunted Carson Wentz's development. I actually think he's a better quarterback this year because he actually got out on the field. But if you were to ask the Eagles, I don't think the Eagles have the mindset, oh, it's rebuild time. We actually have no way that we can win the NFC East. I think they said, you know what? We just now are going to change our development plan for our younger quarterback. We're still going to field a competitive team, and we'll see where it takes us. And, I mean, there's a lot of other examples where young quarterbacks have been put out there. Marcus Mariota was out there immediately, and Tennessee was in the thick of the playoff race. And even Tampa Bay with Jameis Winston, you know, if you go back 2 years ago, they were a 9-7 team on the brink of making the playoffs. So I don't think that just because you give a younger quarterback the reins means that you're of the mindset, well, we're going to give him 2 or 3 years, and we know that realistically we're not going to make the playoffs. I just don't think that's how the NFL operates right now.
Fair enough. I hear you, but it just seems like it's unwritten rules sometimes kind of force issues that are that don't need to be forced. That's that. Listen, you guys stay warm, drive safely.
Appreciate that. All right, Abdul. Good hearing from you. Thanks so much for the phone call. I think that, and I'm not saying that Abdul was exactly saying this, but do you agree, Jeff, that it seems as if there's a narrative across the NFL that when you put a young guy in any position, a running back, a quarterback, that all of a sudden that means the franchises of the belief we're going to allow for the learning curve, we're content with just being a mediocre, bottom-of-the-standings team. I don't think that's an indication. I think we've seen a number of teams that give young players opportunities, and they're still very much in the playoff hunt.
I think teams have to manage their expectations.
I'll give you that.
But I don't think they go in with like, okay, now that we have a young quarterback, you realize that, you know, we're going to really stink for the next 3 years.
Correct.
That's not – that there's no question. Between the draft, the free agency, the cap – there's teams. These players can play, man. These guys, this isn't like the old days where you kind of get guys and they have to develop. These guys are ready to play, for God's sakes. You see what they're running at the combine? You think the stuff that's coming out of college these days? I mean, these players are ready to play, which means you can turn an organization around quickly. You just hope the maturation process is a fast one. And look at with Carson Wentz, it was, okay? But the optics there were like, okay, you know, we got Sam Bradford. We got Chase Daniels. We got a guy that we just drafted number one in the pick. When he's ready to play, we're going to put him in, okay? But Sam Bradford's our guy right now. But then all of a sudden, are you kidding me? Yeah, you can have Bradford. Take him. We'll take the first round pick for him. Did they get a first or a second?
They got a first round pick. Yeah, for Sam Bradford.
Well, they were desperate.
Minnesota, correct. Yeah, because he got hurt right before the start of the season, Bridgewater, and they really didn't have a viable option.
But listen, if you had to ask me today that if what I would do in this situation is I'm all on board for Eli Manning coming back for another year, okay? Because I feel if there's a guy you want with a new coach, okay, a new regime, and a guy that's even though that he's still from the old stuff, he's still a leader in the locker room. He's going to prepare. He's going to learn that new system offensively like the back of his hand, okay? He's going to pick it up like that, all right? And that you say – and you draft a number two guy, you bring him in, you have him and Webb compete for the backup position every week, whatever. You know they're not going to play. So who cares? And then in 2019, then it's – listen, Eli, great career. We had you back for another year. That's awesome. You went to the playoffs. You didn't go to the playoffs. It's now time for the regime change. And, by the way, all year these two guys have been battling out, Webb and X, and – we're going to name this guy our starter for 2019. Eli rides off into the sunset. He goes and plays into another team if he wants to, or he retires. To me, that's the easiest thing to do. Unless number 10 says, I don't want to play here anymore. I want to leave, and here I'm going to do this. He's got a no-trade clause, so the Giants can't sit there and say, Eli, we're going to trade you. Where do you want to go? Well, I guess he could do that, but they just can't. That's just not – so that's my philosophy. That's where I think should happen. I think that Eli can still play as long as you fix some other pieces on offense.
Well, let me ask you this, Jeff, before we get back to the phone calls. You were here in 04 when Eli was a rookie.
Yep.
They had Kurt Warner on the roster. And this is what I get to, where sometimes even the philosophy could change as the season plays out. When Warner took over as the starter.
We were a winning team.
Correct. So my question is, when you went into that season, just as a fellow player, forget what you thought of individuals, I'm assuming you thought Kurt Warner was going to be the starter for the entire season.
No question.
Right? I mean, that's what you envisioned.
Yeah. Yeah.
You thought, all right, they drafted Eli. He was young. Yep. He's going to learn the ropes from an established quarterback. Kurt's going to be the guy.
Right.
And we'll see what happens.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Tom Coughlin, right, decides to go in the younger direction. So I'm bringing that up not to say that that's going to happen if Eli's brought back, but you could tell sometimes even over the course of a season, philosophies change. Directions do change.
And so does production.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, not that Kurt Warner was playing really, really, really bad, but he wasn't playing all that well. Even though we had won, we were winning, okay? But, yeah, I mean, I'm just telling you that from the get-go, if you go with this plan and you tell Eli he's coming back and he's the starter, it's up to Eli Manning to be the starter for 16 games. If he's in the seventh, eighth game of the season and the team's not winning because of Eli Manning, then they're going to make a switch. But he's got to be understanding of that going into it. And it's full disclosure here. Okay, we're not going to keep this from you and then all of a sudden pull it out from underneath you.
That you should know going in. Correct, exactly.
But
yeah.
And if Eli signs up with it, then he knows it. But at least he did it to himself. I'm not playing well, I understand. You want to start number whatever guy it is, Webb or whoever they're going to draft. But I think, to me, that's the conversation that needs to be made, and that's the understanding that has to be understood from both sides, that this is where we're at. And you said it earlier. The organization has every opportunity to do whatever they want to do. I'm sorry. The organization is paying the players to be on our team. We'll do whatever we want to do, and that's just the way it has to be.
Let's head back to the phone line. Scott is in New Mexico. Scott, what's happening?
Hi, Scott.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Well, Scott. What do you got for us?
First, Jeff, I wanted to say, long admired you. I think you and Ray Guy are probably the two best punters I've seen.
Oh, I love you, Scott. Man, do I love you. Thank you.
Well,
that's
true.
Quite an honor.
Might even be the better positional punter.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I had a couple of questions. I'm going to be a little bit of a contrarian into some of the things that were said today. I think, actually, it would be wise to move Eli Manning. But what I wanted to know and get both of your opinions on, can the Giants, the three cities that I projected that he might go to.
Okay, well, hold on. Let me just reiterate. So move him, meaning trade him? Because they can't trade him. So he's going
to
have to. Okay.
Right.
If he agrees to waive his no-trade clause, they could trade him.
So
yeah.
The teams that I've outlined are Arizona, Denver, because of the connection with Peyton and also with John Elway, and also possibly the New York Jets. In your opinion, I wouldn't do this unless they could do this, but could they get a number one draft choice for him if they decide to move him?
I highly doubt a team is going to give up a number one pick, Scott, for a 37-year-old quarterback. Bradford was much younger. Keep that in mind. That's what you have to consider.
Now, Denver is a team that, and I just read on this, I don't know how official or unofficial it is, but, I mean, Mike Sullivan, supposedly he was the new quarterback coach at the Denver Broncos. So, you know, there would be something that you could see some symmetry.
A connection there. Yeah.
Right. The reason I'm mentioning any of this, and it's sort of a loaded question, I'm not as dire about the Giants situation. I think I've done some critiquing and did some analysis myself. There's about 12 offensive linemen coming out in the draft that are excellent, ones that I think can actually almost plug and play. People like Connor Williams, Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson of Notre Dame, Braden Smith of Auburn. So you have a lot on the table coming out in this draft. This is one of the better drafts for offensive linemen. Larry Allen Jr., who is dead, of course, is probably the best offensive lineman I've seen, along with Anthony Munoz. So I think they'll be able to settle that issue with the offensive line. The reason I mentioned the Eli Manning situation, this is sort of a loaded question. There's a quarterback sitting out there that is very quick, has brought a team to the Super Bowl. I think you know who I'm talking about. If you don't, it's Colin Kaepernick. And I was wondering if the Giants and Gettleman would actually get serious about potentially getting him on the roster because I think he could help the Giants. He's a much more mobile quarterback, and with the receivers the Giants will be bringing back, I think he could help them in a number of ways. Or is it really a sort of a blackballed situation where no team will take him?
Well, this assuming that Eli's gone, right? I mean,
right, correct. Okay. This is only on the assumption that they do move Eli at some point, or he decides that he's quitting, or whatever.
Well, I think if Eli's moves on, then I think this team's direction is that they're going to go with the younger guys and
I would
play
agree.
Them. And I think at that point, it would be hiring a veteran quarterback to come in here just in case you get into the season, 4 weeks into the season, you're 4-0 and you lose your starter and you need to have a guy that that has some experience, maybe that. But it's not going to be anything, in my opinion, that will happen right away. No, I don't think it will.
Yeah, I also think that if you have a new head coach, depending on what his background is, you know, he may say, I want to develop the younger quarterback, because if this is going to be somebody that I can work with moving forward, we got to be attached at the hip. And this is the guy that I want to run my offense. And I'm not saying that Kaepernick is old. I mean, he is 30 years old, though. So
right.
You're going to be bringing in somebody that's, what, 21, 22 years old. That's a noticeable difference. That's why I think if you're going to start fresh at the quarterback position, I would think a new coach would want to groom somebody so that by the time you get to year two or year three, you've invested all that time in developing that quarterback that you can then build around him moving forward, as opposed to renting a veteran for a year or two and then ultimately handing the reins over to the younger quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, this is the reason why I mention it. If they believe in Davis Webb, as a lot of people say they do, bringing in Kaepernick to me is a wonderful idea, especially as you said, at the age of 30, because you have an established quarterback who not only knows systems but actually has brought teams to, sort of the promised land and can actually do the job. And then if Davis Webb is what they say he is, in 2 or 3 years, he's the ideal choice to replace Kaepernick. So that was my thinking in regards to.
Well, but here's my
thought,
though, Scott, based on what you're saying, and I agree with you. There's value in having a veteran quarterback around to teach a young kid. But if that's the case, then why not just say, Eli, hang around for another year, you're the starter, and then Eli, who has an invaluable amount of information, can mentor the younger quarterback. I mean, why would you even have to go outside the organization if you have him on the books?
Because if you could get something for Eli, and you're saying you can't get a number one draft choice, but say you can get maybe an offensive lineman and the number two. Gettleman sort of intimated it's sort of a little bit like a reclamation project. It's going to take some time to develop. I think it's going to be done. As I said, I don't think the Giants are in such a dire position as everyone claims they are. I think, Jeff, you're right. I think they have talent on the roster. But on the offensive and defensive lines, they're going to have to need to draft. And if you can accumulate a number of draft choices on the offensive line side, and it helps you by building it the way Dallas did it, then you can actually build a championship team.
You can,
and
absolutely.
That's what's necessary.
Well, I mean, the offensive line is where you start and where you finish, too, and appreciate the phone call, Scott. I mean, the Cowboys, they didn't necessarily make a lot of moves. They just picked high, and they used those picks on offensive linemen. Now, remember, you can also go out on the free agent market and address the offensive line. You're not going to do it 1 year in the draft alone. So
No. It's
the combination of both. Now, is there value, Jeff, if somebody offers you a boatload of picks for the number two and you say, well, we do like this offensive lineman. We move down a little. We could still get him. We can also grab another position. I think that's something you would consider.
Well, what's interesting to me there is that I think that if you decide that you're going to stay with Eli for a year, and that you don't really particularly like any of the quarterbacks to be that number two pick, you could stockpile them, build that offensive line, put Eli behind it for a year.
Of course.
Have them play for a year, the offensive line, okay? And then next year you go for a quarterback that you now have built your offensive line around for 1 year. So, I mean, I think you could – offensive lines, if you got a bunch of picks, I mean, you could maybe go get a couple good linemen and a free agent and
address
build up your offensive line.
Correct,
put
yeah.
Eli behind that offensive line and then deal with the quarterback
thing next
year.
Let it build chemistry, yeah. Or perhaps give Davis Webb the opportunity if you think highly of him.
Well, we don't know that yet.
Correct.
They might think that Davis Webb's their guy.
Gettleman
and build
may come
the offensive
in.
Line.
I mean, here's the thing. You know, you brought up a good point. It would be lovely to see – Dave Gettleman's evaluation of Eli Apple when he came into the draft. You know what would also be great?
Davis Webb.
See Dave Gettleman's evaluation of Davis Webb
yeah.
when Davis Webb was coming out of the draft so that you understand his mindset. Now, listen, Gettleman is not going to share that with anybody, and he wouldn't be wise because you don't want to give away the intentions of the Giants in the draft.
Right.
So, of course, you're not going to say that. But, yes, if we had that information in an ideal world, then all of this speculation would be easy to maneuver and figure out.
And maybe that's the way you go. I mean, maybe you say, hey, listen, who wants to get the number two pick? What are we going to get for it?
Let the bidding begin.
And then we'll build our offensive line, get Eli back for a year. Then the next year we have Davis Webb, who is a number two quarterback all season this year. We've got an experienced offensive line, and maybe we get to draft another one the following year. We build that offensive line, and then Davis Webb comes in the second year. He's been under Eli for 2 years now. But there's just so many different scenarios that we could talk about.
Of course.
But that one does make a little bit of sense. You know, but unless Josh Rosen and Darnold is these guys are the typical franchise guys that you think can be your quarterback for the next decade, then that squashes that idea that we just did. Then they're going to go after the quarterback.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Brandon's in New Jersey. Brandon, welcome aboard. What do you got?
Yes, what's going on, man?
Doing all right, Brandon. What do you got for us?
Yeah, what I wanted to say, I'm going to be the GM. This is the way I would go if I was Gettleman. Now, first of all, I believe that the coach should be Steve Wilks. Steve Wilks should come in. He can clean up a lot of things. And as his offensive coordinator, I would bring in North Turner, and I would bring in John Fox as the defensive coordinator. Second of all, I want y'all to know. I want y'all to know to think about all of this at the end.
Well, first,
and
yeah,
I wouldn't go. I would not draft the quarterback in the first round. I would trade out of that spot. Everybody's going to want those two quarterbacks, so they're going to trade a buttload of picks to the Giants for that quarterback. Everybody in the locker room saying Eli can still play. I believe Eli can hang around for the next 3 years and have Davis Webb sit behind him for the next 3 years and build the offensive line around Eli and Davis Webb for the next 3 years and build the rest of the team with the picks that we get. That's the way I would go with that, and make a trade for Corey Glenn at left tackle, move Flowers to right tackle, and build the interior line through the draft.
Well, listen, Dave Gettleman said that he's going to focus on the offensive line, Brandon, so I don't think that's a pipe dream. I think he has come in from the outside looking in, and he realizes he has to get to work in the trenches. So I don't think that we need to speculate. I think he will address that. Whether it comes through the draft or free agency, that remains to be seen. As far as
what you think about Steve Wilks with North Turner as the offensive coordinator and John Fox as the defensive coordinator?
Well, Steve Wilks, for members of the audience that are unfamiliar with that name, he's the defensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. So that's obviously why a lot of people are throwing out that name, because Gettleman has a connection to him in Carolina.
He's the guy. He's the guy.
Well, and I'm not saying that he's not a good coach. Listen, Carolina's defense has been steady, whether it's Sean McDermott or Steve Wilks running it. So there's continuity there. But, you know, the other thing that you have to take into consideration, Brandon, is Steve Wilks has no head coaching experience. And I don't know if the Giants want to go in the same direction of a Ben McAdoo or they want to go in the direction of bringing in a guy who's been there and done that before. And what I mean, I'm not saying that Steve Wilks doesn't know how to run a team. I'm talking about that you have prior NFL experience managing a team, which is what Jeff pointed out. It's not just about being an X's and O's great mind when you're an NFL coach. It's about managing, taking care of issues in the locker room, designating responsibilities. You're thinking about North Turner as an offensive coordinator is right under the thinking of what Sean McVay did, because Sean McVay did not have head coaching experience, but he said, you know what, if I'm going to have somebody run my defense, Jeff, I'm going to have a guy that's been there before. Yeah. So I understand your mindset there.
And
I just don't know where the Giants want to go.
That would be perfect on the coaching staff.
Well,
and to build the offensive line around Eli. Eli's still got at least another 3 years left. I think he'll retire in the 17th season. Let Davis Webb be the backup and build this team around those two for the next 3 years.
All right, Brandon. Appreciate the
Thank
phone
you,
call.
Brandon.
Thanks
right.
so much
Good
for
point,
weighing
Sam.
In. And North Turner has been an offensive coordinator before he was head coach. I mean, he was the offensive coordinator of the Cowboys when Emmitt Smith was the running back
and
had them performing at a high level.
The Vikings.
The Vikings, correct. And then they parted ways with him. Pat Shurmur took over. So he's been in that position. But, you know, North Turner's also up there in age. You know, I don't know whether or not he's interested. Same thing, John Fox has been around the variety of teams and a variety of times in the NFL. So, you know, you don't know whether these guys have the itch and the urge to coach anymore. You know, that's something that we have to find out before we start speculating that they would be a viable option. All right, let's head back to the lines. Len is in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Happy
right,
New
Len.
Year, first
you too.
Of all.
Happy New Year to you, Len. What do you got for us?
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, I just wanted to tell you, I haven't had a chance. We haven't talked in a while. You were on the cover of the Game Bill magazine for the Cowboys game this year.
Yes, I was. Thank
it's right
you.
Right over there,
nice,
actually.
Nice interview, yeah. Jeff. Congratulations.
There you go.
Those
I just
so
have a copy right here.
It's always handy.
Oh, thank
yes.
you. I appreciate that.
Okay. All right. I know you guys are running out of time. Let me rush through a couple of things
sure.
here if I can.
What do you got?
With Cockrell, I believe he's an unrestricted free agent. I think you're going to – if we think he's the fourth cornerback – he's going to get money. He's going to get offers that you can't give to the fourth cornerback. In other words, we're going to lose Cockrell.
He very well could.
We have to make a judgment about Cockrell that he's better than that because he's going to cost some money in the open market.
I think it depends. I mean, remember, the Steelers were willing to part ways with him, and the Steelers didn't necessarily have a great deal of depth, in my opinion, at that position. I mean, I think they could have used him a lot this season given the
yeah.
fact that they had some issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he emerged. I'm not saying he should be the number two corner. I'm just saying if we slot him as the fourth cornerback, we're not going to be able to keep him because he's going to get some offers that are going to be higher than what you can pay the fourth cornerback.
Sure.
Hey, here's my wish for the coach. I want NFL head coaching experience. I want a guy on the offensive side. And I want a guy who's been in the NFC East at some time during his career. Now, that I know that limits who we've got, because we got seven guys that we say we're going to interview, and there's only a few of those who fit that criteria. But that would be the criteria that I would set up. And
but,
I would make
why?
One
Len,
more phone
Len.
Call past the seven guys, one more phone call, Jeff, next Tuesday morning.
Okay.
I'd call Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
You're going to try to go after Saban, huh?
And just see on Tuesday morning whether there's any interest.
All right.
All right, let me say this about Eli Manning. If you can't say to Eli Manning before March 1, you were going to have at least 2 years to compete for the starting quarterback job here in New York, if you can't say that to him, I wouldn't give him that money on March the 8th.
Well, they're not going to.
I mean, he's not going to want to stay here, Jeff.
Well, they're not going to. There's no way they're going to give him that money if they don't. No, I think this will be rectified before March 1st.
But it can't be for 1 year, Jeff. Your scenario was 1 year and then the new quarterback takes over in 19.
He has 2 years left on his deal, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, he's got 18 and 19. Well, yeah. Well, then you can't replace him in 19. I mean, you got to give Eli. If he fails,
you
can't say to Eli, "We're going to make a change in 2019."
Well,
come
no, but,
play
they,
for
no,
one
but
year.
They could. They could. Like, they could lay out that for 18, you're our guy, and we may revisit this situation again in the offseason. But what is Eli worried about that? Why would he be worried about that at that point? I mean, listen, every single offseason you can evaluate everybody's contract.
Well, they're one-year
deals. But are you giving him an opportunity to compete in that second year, or are you saying we're making a change in the
but
second
why,
year?
But why would
I don't
Eli
need to make
be
that
even,
decision
yeah,
right now.
Why do you even need to lay that out? The whole point is making sure
because,
you know what you're going to do for 18. You'll approach
because
19.
Because if you want to know what Eli thinks, you're going to have to lay it out, Lance.
Yeah, no, you may
Eli
have those conversations.
Ask that question.
Well, you may, and there's nothing wrong with having those conversations, but he also may be content with you just committing to him for 1 year right now. I don't know what his thinking is.
My answer to the question would be yes. My
answer
to the question is yes. You could
say no to that.
No, but he could say no to anything. But I would my answer to that would be yeah. We'll give you the opportunity to compete in 2019. Great. If Eli takes us to the Super Bowl in 2018,
correct.
Question
well,
answered. You're going to be our starter anyway.
Yeah,
we have number two
I think
yet.
If I'm Eli, I want to hear I got 2 years to
go
compete.
Anywhere.
Now, if Webb beats him out, or if we draft a new quarterback and the new quarterback beats him out, that's different. But Eli's okay.
All right.
I think I made my point on that. Can I say something on Eli
real
Apple?
Quick.
I know we're
real
at the
quick.
End here.
Yeah,
one
real,
quick thing on
quick.
Eli Apple.
Very quick. Yeah.
I don't know if Dave Gettleman asked him this question when they had that meeting, but I would sure want to know. I would ask him straight out, Eli Apple, do you want to play for the New York Football Giants?
Yeah, well, that's
do
a
you
question.
Wanna, do you
I mean, to me, that's an obvious
here.
Question, Len. I mean, I think of course you ask him that.
Here's what it didn't sound like that question was asked.
Well,
because I think this guy doesn't get back in that locker room on March 15th unless he tells me he wants to play for this football team. Because you talk about rooms, Jeff, and you talk about clicks. I mean, that room's a mess.
Well, that's got to be fixed.
It's got to be fixed, and we got to find out whether this guy wants to be here. If he wants to go play somewhere else, let's, you know, go find somebody who'll
take it. We got plenty of time.
We'll make a deal.
Plenty of time. It's January 3rd. We got plenty of time for that.
And I'm sure that's a question that was asked his way, and appreciate the phone call, Len. Let's go to Jerry in Boca. Jerry, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, Jeff and Lance.
Hi.
First of all, I missed you guys yesterday, and Salzburg said the other day that was the end of your webcast. I'd like, first of all, clearance on what your schedule for the webcast
well,
is.
Well, no,
going
we're
going
to continue. We're going to continue the show all off season, every single weekday at noon Eastern. There was no show yesterday because the facility was closed because of the snowstorm here in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. That's why we didn't have a program yesterday. But the show is going to continue without interruption the entire off season.
Yep.
Okay, so
you're stuck
my
with
misreading
us.
Of what Salzburg said.
Correct, that was misspoken.
But now, just a comment, and I'll make it quick. If the Giants decide to draft a quarterback, basically they're saying we're giving up on the 2018 season and we're looking for the future.
I disagree.
No, I mean, look, Jerry, I don't know how long you were listening, Jerry. Jeff and I had that very conversation about 20 minutes ago, and we said that I think that's a false narrative. There's a number of teams that have had young quarterbacks. Carson Wentz took over his first year, and Philadelphia did not win the division. They were competitive, and this year now, 1 year removed, they won the conference. I mean, they did win the conference. They got the number one seed.
I think giving up is too strong of a word. I think that you're going to have to manage everybody's expectations, but I don't think giving up should be the word.
Well, I'm doing it based on, in fact, your last conversation that you had a couple of callers ago, and I do agree with what you said there. But what we're talking about here is any successful football team begins with the offensive line. And if you don't get multiple picks and address the offensive line, you're just going to have a mediocre season.
No question.
Yeah. It
depends, though, if they target free agents. I mean, I don't know what his game plan is. I don't think you can go in thinking that you're bringing in five new rookies to play on the offensive line. I think you do it mixed.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm saying that what you have to do is focus intensively on the offensive line and forget about quarterback, get multiple picks. You've got a lot of things you've got to shore up. But anyway, just one other thing, and I wanted to address this to Jeff because you know, time is getting short. The surprise of the 2017 season was UM's success. And my question is, what do these guys think about what the effect on the draft for the 2018 season will be for the University of Miami Hurricanes, and what will that mean with their quest for a national championship?
Hi, Jerry. Appreciate the phone call.
Well, I think the program is obviously on an up and up. And he was asking me more like what the seniors leaving going into the NFL draft? Is that what it was?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. What it means for Miami now that they made a name for themselves this season,
well, I think,
and they could lose some talent.
They're going to lose some talent, yeah. But they're also by the notoriety of the college now, they're getting better recruits. They're in the top five in recruiting this year. Their recruit class. So, you know, because of the success, they're going to get more players, and that also means they're going to start losing more junior players. But I think that this team defensively is pretty healthy as far as upperclassmen. There's not too many that are graduating. There's a lot of underclassmen. Offensively, I think they're set. They just need to find a quarterback. And I think Nicole Perry, I think, is the guy that's going to compete with Rozier, and then there's one other guy. So I think Miami is up and up. They are going to be around for the next couple of years, and they're going to be good.
They're ahead of schedule.
A little ahead of schedule this year.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of was. I think that they really caught some people off guard that they would be this good this year. But you know, hey, let's just build on it.
And I think the experience is invaluable.
No
what
question.
They're able
to all those
season.
Young players, oh, yeah. Big games, uh-huh. ACC championship game, the Orange Bowl. They played Florida State at Florida State this year. A lot of good games that those young players got a lot of experience, including my son, which is good.
And did that all while experiencing a true hurricane as well.
Exactly, yeah. Two of them, actually.
Correct, yeah. So, I mean, they got through that off-the-field
yep.
issues and
yep.
still were able to get all the way to at least still compete for a spot in the playoffs. So it says a lot about how far the program's come. With that being said, that is the end of our program. We appreciate everybody for tuning in. So as I mentioned, Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running every weekday during the course of the offseason. We'll be back on Monday at noon Eastern. We'll recap the playoffs, keep you caught up with everything happening with the coaching search and getting in your phone calls as well. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy
See you,
the weekend. We'll speak to you on Monday. Have a good one.